Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. I have been here many Sundays, as you know, and have come often with my cello to see you in person. I am personally glad that you're going to stay on Zoom a little bit longer. That'll give me an opportunity to share with you the wonderful services that you have a little bit longer on a regular basis. I think you know a lot about me and Sally's introduction, and my words suffice for that. But I'm going to ask Mary Ellen to introduce herself just a little bit. I'll tell you a little bit more about her life. And then we thought we'd talk about how we got to Texas. Then we'll describe a little bit the two different locations where we gave some service and what we did and what it was like. And then we'll share a few reflections at the end, the meaning that we put into our work. The songs that you played already are just a wonderful lead up to what we have, because I think a part of our desire to go was to be a part of the blessing that it was wished in that song, and knowing that we all have some connection to each other and to be a part of that. So Mary Ellen, would you like to unmute and introduce yourself briefly, and then maybe start out by telling us why we got to Texas?
Yes. So I don't know if my image is a little bit dark, but I wanted you to see, I have a picture of Kateri Tekakwitha, the first Native American saint in the Catholic list of saints, Indian Native American saint, and a horse there. I live on the Yakima Reservation, although it's a separate town, Wapato. Don't know how many of you know the Yakima Valley well. So we are blessed to be on the land of the 14 tribes and bands that are now called the Yakima Nation. And the city of Wapato that I live in is about 70% Latino. About 25% of the adults use English as their second language. It's an immigrant community and a farm worker community. Farm work is what the people here do. The next biggest employer is the school district, so you see. And I carry a very grateful heart toward Unitarians. When I was a very young sister in my first years of ministry in the Tri-Cities, teaching first grade, as you probably know, the Catholic Church has a wonderful breadth of Catholic social justice teaching. But the Unitarians put it into practice, and I was able to accompany another Catholic friend to many presentations by the Unitarian Church there in Richland, Kennewick, Pasco, and they kept the world open to me, and I believe were instrumental in my being on a group that called for fair housing for African Americans at the time, making weekly phone calls. Sister Linda and I have known each other since we were in college and became very good friends. So here we are many years later with this call from Catholic Charities across the United States to sisters with the hope that maybe as many as 200 sisters could hurry to the border to help with the crush of refugees that were coming across or seeking to come across. And you can imagine, of course, I wanted to go. I work with immigrants. I speak Spanish. I know some of the circumstances they have come from. And so when Linda asked me, shall we do this? That was the little boost I needed to say, yes, let's go for it. And we began looking where we might serve various options that Catholic Charities offered. Anything else about how we got there?
Well, I would say that when I first heard this call, another sister in my house immediately responded, just spontaneously said, oh, and emailed that day and got herself organized to go to San Diego. And I was thinking, how does she do that? I don't speak Spanish. She didn't speak Spanish. This is way out of my comfort zone. I have this time. I really could go, but oh my goodness. So my contacting Mary Ellen was really for the support of if she's interested in going, if I had somebody who spoke Spanish who could go with me, then I think I could do this. Teresa's, the other sister's, she almost shamed me into taking some action and getting there. And I'm just so grateful. But that's the way, in a community of sisters, that is the way that it can happen. One person has the energy and the excitement, and that can be caught. And then with the mutual support, we could get ourselves going there. So I was grateful to Teresa, and I was very grateful to Mary Ellen, because with the not being able to speak Spanish is a definite handicap, but she was just right there. What I learned to say in perfect Spanish was, "That lady over there can help you."
The testimony to community is one of the themes that you're going to hear throughout. Mm-hmm. People working together, and it makes me want to thank you for your commitment to come together to be with other members of your congregation, because there's so much we can do together that we cannot possibly do alone. Linda and I have very different gifts, and they work well together, at least we think they do.
Very good. So I'm going to share a little bit of a PowerPoint as I tell you about the first place that we went. And let me get it going here. And with any luck at all, it'll be just work very well. So we first went to San Antonio, and you can see where it is in location to the others. And this, we went to a mass shelter there, and they probably took people that came across the border in Laredo, McAllen, and Brownsville, those different places there. This is
I'm not seeing your screen yet, Linda.
Oh, really?
Are other people?
Oh, okay. I didn't screen share then, maybe. Let me try that again. I'm going to have to call it up. Thank you for mentioning that, Mary Ellen, because
yes,
that would be somewhat.
While she's doing that, if I could say, even at the beginning of this, that Catholic Charities communicated with the leadership of Women Religious to put out this call. So we're so blessed to belong to this big, complicated community that could make this happen. And we found ourselves part of this, for me, very powerful collaboration between the U.S. government, Catholic Charities managing volunteers, et cetera. So
Right. Now
we see your screen, Linda.
Yeah. Okay, great. So you can see where San Antonio is there in the middle, and taking places from these border crossings along the south of it. This is the Coliseum of the San Antonio Spurs. We weren't able to take any pictures inside, so I'm just going, here's the Coliseum part, and I'll show you, let's see, on this next screen, two screens. This is a view. You can see the Coliseum, you can see the report area, and then where the unaccompanied minors were was in this expo hall here. But first of all, I'll tell you a little bit about how we got there. We stayed with, Sisterhood, and the a community of Sisters of Divine Providence who had a college in San Antonio. It was at the, and they had their retired sisters there, as well as the teaching sisters, and also a skilled care unit for their sisters. They had plenty of room, welcomed us free of charge, and there's Mary Ellen. But it was at the far end, the absolute opposite end of San Antonio, about 15 miles away. So we decided that we would try. We were told that we would probably need to take Uber or Lyft, but we're bus travelers. And so we scoped out the public bus system. And when we went the first day, Robert and Rachel were the two people waiting for the bus, clearly street people. And they stayed with us that whole first day to help us get our bus passes and find our way to the Coliseum through the one transfer that was there. So then we were able to commute each day by bus But thanks to unlikely people, as Mary Ellen said, when they told us afterwards, they didn't think that a couple of old ladies would be willing to talk to them, that they thought they'd be, that we'd be frightened of them. But indeed, we needed help, and who but street people are able to give us the help that we needed at that time, knowing the bus system and so forth. It was just one of the first angels of, and that mutuality of blessing that came to us while we were there. This is one of the other sisters who got on the bus from another location and traveled onto the bus. So now we are at the Expo Center, and this is the room where Catholic Charities had, where the volunteers checked in. Those are some, one volunteer and a couple of employees of Catholic Charities. And this is the larger crew of people. Some of these were hired to help with the check-in and the COVID screening and those kinds of things for the volunteers. It was a wonderful collaboration as Mary Ellen said, of government employees and of the I'm just looking for stopping sharing. Did I get it stopped or not?
No. There.
Is it stopped? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. A wonderful collaboration among the Catholic Charities workers who were in charge of the volunteers, and then the people that helped, that were the pod leaders and providing the meals, the government employees that were bringing these unaccompanied minors to this large expo center. What I'd like you to imagine, we weren't able to take pictures inside, but when we walked into the expo center, there were two large cavernous rooms. They were wall to wall, filled with 900 white cots, each of two rooms. And on those cots, standing near them, visiting within the pods that were 30 cots marked off by masking tape on the floor, were young boys, young men, ages 12 to 17. And they had been brought there, had crossed the border unaccompanied, and were brought to this site and needed to, were COVID screened to begin with. Those who had COVID were brought to an isolation area. The others needed to stay there until the workers that were, the social workers were able to find a placement for them while they were seeking asylum. And the placement could be with family members, with friends, and some didn't have any connections at all. But these caseworkers were absolutely diligent in being sure that these kids were not being trafficked, that they would go with someone who really would take care of them, not enslave them. That process, especially because many of the places of the connections and relatives that they had were living in rural areas of the United States. Some were afraid because of documentation for themselves to show birth certificates and things like this, but they had to have show proof that they were related, go through a criminal background check to be sure that they were as sure as possible that they would not be trafficked. So these boys were ending up waiting for several weeks, sometimes 2 or 3 months, in this center. They could not leave. They might have been able to go outside for a half an hour a day to play soccer in an enclosed area. But other than that, they were inside all day. They were making bracelets. They were playing cards. They were visiting. What we as volunteers could do would be to simply interact with them. Maybe if they're interested, teach them a few words of English, play cards with them, get them supplies, escort them to a medical appointment or to a counseling appointment with their social worker. help deliver laundry back or collect laundry, replace the pod leaders when they needed a break. And in other words, to make that time as caring of those young men and as pleasant as possible. And what I would say, it felt to me as a former teacher, sort of like a 24/7 indoor recess supervision, but there was a happy hum beehive of activity in that place. And part of that was because there were volunteers who could interact, see these boys personally, one-on-one, and interact with them and in small groups, while the pod leader was needing to just be sure that she or he could track all the kids and be sure that none of them got lost there. So they would line up, just perpetually line up for each meal, go into another room where they would pick up a clamshell meal and sit facing one way, 6 feet apart, when then they could take their masks off, which they wore 24/7 mask and to eat. And then they'd be lined up and brought back to their pod area. So there were elements of regimentation, but there was kindness and there was care. And that's what I would say about that. And then I just wanted to share this screen. Whoops, I may have lost my PowerPoint.
While you're looking, Linda, I know we're going to be doing some summaries at the end, but this really caused me to reflect on American government, American politics, and the touch of the personal. So the government was, our government could come in and set up from scratch everything that was needed to house 1,900 boys safely, to feed them, to make sure that they had counseling activities and so forth, contract out the efficiency, you know, the experience of politically, the governor of Texas suggested that there was sexual abuse going on at the Freeman Coliseum. The volunteers said there was absolutely no evidence of that. We would concur with that. But because he has that political voice, that suspicion could be sown throughout our media. So that was a kind of a horrifying experience. And then the personal touch, although we were asked to not sort of fraternize personally with the boys in the sense of asking them about their stories, because they were in transition, they didn't want inappropriate attachments developing. But Linda got assigned to the special care for one boy who turned 18, but he had injured his leg the day before. So he was kept in a kind of isolation in this big room and had to have an adult kind of specialing him for about three or four, well, yes, it was several days, days. We kept looking for him to be gone, because what should have happened when he turned 18 was he would go out with Catholic Charity staff, celebrate his birthday, be put on the bus, and he is now an adult and at risk of apprehension by border, you know, La Migra. But so to me, I took it as an act of protection that this young man with a leg injury was just kind of quietly kept there, but not there. Mm-hmm. And so those three dimensions all the time. And then the collaboration of faith and government, each doing what maybe they do best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I just wanted to show, these are some of the artwork of the boys. And, you know, to imagine these boys in this cavernous room for several months, never seeing the outside, when they were really from, as you can see by the artwork, from the countryside. Very simple, very likable, not a sense of gang membership at all, but just really of seeking a better life. You can see that in their artwork. This is one close up. And then they did do a lot of beautiful origami paper folding and other artwork. So these were some of the ones that they did. Now that really is my part, and I'm going to ask Mary Ellen, you may want to screen share now and go on. I'm conscious of the time, and so we'll talk a little bit about Laredo, and then we'll share a few closing reflections.
Don't focus on the time, Linda and Mary Ellen, please. I think we can give you some extra time. It's really important.
Okay. And let us know, you know, Sally, if we can see you. I'm trying to set this up so I can still see you, you know, if we kind of need to get it moving or whatever. So by the end of about 2 weeks of our being there, but longer for the boys, almost half of them had been moved on. Most of them did have a contact in mind when they came. It could be even a parent, a sibling, an aunt or uncle. So they were down to half the number of children. There were plenty of staff and volunteers. Linda and I decided to travel by bus, Linda's always commitment, from San Antonio. Can you see? I don't know if you can see my screen here. And I'm choosing to, well, here, I'll go ahead to from current slide. Let's see.
Yep. That's it.
Okay. To Laredo, which is right on the border. I was really pleased that we were able to do that. And this, you can see where I'm from, Eagle Pass is one of the places that people around here talk about. Some of these major border crossings, Brownsville, McAllen, I hear from the people who live here. So let me see if I, excuse me, going backwards. And we went to a place called La Frontera, run by Catholic Charities of Laredo Diocese. And so this is me. This is the sister that called for help. When before we got there, she was the only volunteer. So that's why we came down, Sister Rosalie. And because of COVID, people were asked to spend as much time as possible outside, wear masks all the time. The chairs were set up because as soon as the new group comes, they have to be tested for COVID. So they're social distancing, waiting for their turn to be tested. And if they do test positive, they had to go to the COVID house, which was separated on the same property, but at a distance. You'll see that later. We tried here, I think we're trying to, oh, it's cereal, I think, maybe for breakfast. We'd try to bring out some little activities for the children when we could. So just some scenes there. This gentleman had begun volunteering at La Frontera to do community service. The director was wonderful at receiving community service volunteers, and he loved it so much he kept on working. He worked on sanitation and maintenance. You can see him here ready with collecting trash. And you'll see another picture of the this woman is a member, a lay member of a congregation in the Midwest. This was her second time to volunteer at La Frontera. And this was kind of the average age of these dangerous people that are flooding our border and threatening our lives. So almost all were mothers with very small children. And one of the things that struck both Linda and I is the children, for the most part, were not afraid. They were very happy to be exploring their environment. You could see that they felt safe. And we were trying to do this balance of personal welcoming and all the institutional stuff that you have to do when you're feeding a crowd, being mindful of COVID, et cetera.
I might want to say, Marion, that the people here were identified by the Border Patrol as vulnerable families, vulnerable people. And so the Border Patrol themselves would bring them here. And the agenda of this welcome center was to help them within hopefully 24 hours to get on their way to, they'd already received papers that said you can stay in the United States until your hearing has happened, and then the hearing might happen 2 years from now. So these are legally, by the time they got here, they were legal to be in the United States.
And you can see the consultation going. This gentleman reminds me that the people were overwhelmingly from Honduras, Guatemala, and Salvador, but occasionally there would be a group who would come, including some Haitians and Cubans and Venezuelans. And they seem to be in different reality. So my greatest joy was when I was able to help them with all this paperwork and figuring out their transportation, find out where they were from, where they were going, and how they were gonna get there. And these are people who maybe had zero experience of the United States. So they would be given a paper that they could show to any English speaker of what the, you know, the train or bus or plane that they were taking, the schedule and so forth. So it was, we volunteers spent our time in what was called La Ropa Room, because each traveler needed to get a change of clothing so that they could take a shower, change into clean clothing. And unfortunately, for the most part, they had to throw their old clothing away to be. But Sister Rosalie, and there's just a series of pictures here of volunteers sorting. And we would get things to looking kind of nice. And then the women would be having to look through to find things that fit, that met their needs. And it would look like this again. But you see the children playing too. Linda, feel free to. And then we'd get it sort of back in order. And you can see we everything, you know, socks and trousers and tops and so forth. And Linda created a box that turned out to be many, many boxes of inappropriate. These are donated clothing. We would find things like evening clothes, dresses covered with sequins, things that we quickly put into the inappropriate for the present need. A whole box of shoelaces. So one of the things that struck me was the decision-making from the bishop deciding to open this whole Catholic Charities Center to the service of the immigrants to trying to find matches for shoelaces. Mm-hmm. The people's shoelaces were taken away from them while they were in detention. And they had spent some only a few days, others maybe a month or more in detention facilities. And they came to us with only the clothes on their back, minus shoelaces, minus belts. The center had a daycare when there wasn't COVID. And so we were able to provide some little toys for the children to occupy themselves for the day or two that they were there. Once we kind of came to, we saw that all down the hallway on the first floor were information sheets. You can see taxi, who was going to the airport when, just this kind of constant flow of helping people be on their way and who was going where, when. The center had a van. One of the staff people drove twice daily, made the rounds to the bus, the train station, and the airport. They used to even do it at 4:30 in the morning, but they eventually had to hand that over to taxis. So this was one day's count, 73 guests, 30 were in the COVID isolation. Usually COVID was not that many. It would be one or two, maybe three families who had tested positive. While I was there, no one got seriously ill from COVID, but they just had to wait out. I think it was 10 days, was it, Linda?
Mm-hmm. Or until they tested, yes.
Yeah, or until they tested positive. So here's the COVID house. And we would push this red cart just to the gate and then back off. And then a COVID resident would come, gather the food and take it in to the people. And we could see their children playing and so forth, but we had to keep our distance. This hard for them and us. By the end of the time, we had come from Sister Rosalie to 10 of us. So look at the kitchen now. And the sisters were able to fix, they're fixing like tacos and stuff, you know, really. And these are sisters that came from the Midwest, from Laredo originally, and now living in San Antonio. One of them is a candidate in her community. So one of them had been the director of the Senior Citizen Center. That was a previous incarnation of this building, previous use. And Linda had taken over. This is the kitchen. When Rosalie left, Linda was willing to take on that daunting task. We sisters that celebrated one night going out to dinner, and because we were working with locals, we got to know a wonderful local place that we could celebrate. And this is a mix of sisters and associates who were there by the time it was time for us to leave. These are just some snapshots of the other facilities, the food room, the dining room, which they couldn't use because it was indoors and because of COVID, everybody had to stay outdoors. The diaper room, Linda spent a lot of time here besides in the kitchen. We would prepare little bags with a certain number of diapers and the other supplies that were needed. The majority of the families coming had a child in diapers. One or more. And here was where we stayed, this elegant hotel right on the border. Laredo is the busiest inland border crossing with Mexico. And there's this constant hum of traffic going back and forth, trains, trucks, cars, and people, pedestrians. The director of the center lived in Mexico with her husband and commuted every day. He had had a documents problem, and so they had had to move to Mexico. La Posada is a four-star, AAA, four diamond, I guess. Lots of amenities. It was beautiful to come home to each day. We felt so luxurious. Beautiful gardens, two swimming pools. And we would walk from there to the center that you saw, La Frontera, protecting ourselves with the sun, from the sun. Laredo is very hot, famously hot. And on the way, we would pass places like this, Sanchez Ropa Usada, used clothing, and dozens of people sorting those clothes that come from all over the U.S. and will be sent to various places in Mexico and Latin America. And some of them would stay in Laredo for shoppers from Mexico who come across. This was the park right across the street from where we were staying. Laredo was Mexican longer than it's been in the United States. The culture, the feel, the architecture, this is the Central Plaza, the cathedral was at one end, you know, and this hotel at the other. And I loved Texas, and it gave me a wonderful other feeling besides that horrible one that I got from the governor or other. This was a scene from our patio looking down on the first floor of the hotel. You can see how lovely it was. This was Catholic Charities thanking the sisters who had come and just celebrating itself, celebrating the sisters and thanking them. Love proves itself by deeds.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll spend just about 2 minutes on reflections, and then we're happy to stay after as well. I already talked a little bit about sisterhood. The other thing that I would want to mention is this phrase called Islands of Sanity. And I was reading some material of an author called Margaret Wheatley, and she's asking the question, as we face these absolutely overwhelming issues like immigration or COVID or environmental disaster, how can we be with that? And she is saying about all we really can do is create islands of sanity, little places in our local area where we apply the principles of love, the principles of mutual blessing, of receiving interdependence. And that's what we can do. And we really regarded both La Frontera and the Freeman Center as islands of sanity in this huge, overwhelming, absolutely impossible to really resolve immigration situation. Mary Ellen, would you want to share one or two reflections before we close?
We were very struck that we see what we're looking for. One of the sisters brought that home to me in San Antonio. So the Border Patrol, not about good or bad people, but Border Patrol have to be looking for people, illegals, and police are looking for lawbreakers. And we as educators are looking for people who are ready to learn and seeing children for children and seeing potential, hope. These families have sent their children across. They are trusting their precious children to the care of strangers. So it was very important, I think, for us to be there. We could bring our point of view. Another time was when we were riding a city bus and we met street people. We were looking for helpers, and that's what we found. I was so moved by, and I think anybody who would be there, the experience that we are one family. These children immediately enter into our hearts. These are our little brothers and sisters. Excuse me for, it's so different from what we sometimes are hearing in the, you know, the loud blasts, the tenderness of this one family that we belong to. I had the opportunity, Becca, the director of La Frontera. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
what wanted to check, the American bishops wanted to see how things were going at the border. And she said, you know, we're able to push people on from here where we have what we, but what happens when they get where they're going? They have no more resources when they get there than they had when they came to us. How are our dioceses welcoming and supporting these newcomers? I was so proud of her as a Latina laywoman to be challenging the bishops in that open, friendly, but very serious way. We also learned legal implications, had the opportunity to listen in on lawyers who accompany the people that, the people we were working with, none of them were from Mexico, but they also worked with people who were from Mexico and were told to wait on the other side. And they were able to get some legal help. If I heard correctly, the people applying for asylum who can get good legal help, about 90% of them qualify. And the people who don't get legal help, only about 10% do, because they don't know all the legal stuff that shows that you are really in danger for your life or your, you know, your livelihood or so. And if you know anybody who has legal skills and could offer them for immigrants, that's an essential need.
That's, well, I think that might be the challenge we could leave you with and we stay with too. We're back from Texas, but the work goes on. And Doris raised the question, if Afghans come to the Skagit Valley, are we ready? So that's our question. How can we be a blessing right where we are and create islands of sanity here? So thank you for listening. Thank you for listening over time. We really appreciate that. And we'll stay after.